Hello and welcome to Gilead. My name is Soren Hodgshire. I'm the communications and admin host here, and we're so glad you could join us. This past Sunday, March 10th, 2024, we had service at 5 p.m. at my buddy's, per usual. Please join us if you can next time around. And we're continuing our Lenten theme of love/hate relationships. This past Sunday, Vince was preaching about how we can turn our enemies into friends, and how Jesus destroys our categories for each other. So I hope you listen and enjoy.
Before our worship service last year, Adam told me, you have to watch Traitors. Yes. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he was like, here's my family's Peacock password. And I was like, this is all moving so fast. So I went home and I told Rochelle, we have to watch Traitors. And if anyone from NBC asks, we live with Adam and T now. Traitors, if you haven't seen it, is a reality TV competition that, as Adam accurately describes it, is like if the youth group lock-in game Mafia were a TV show. A bunch of reality TV stars from other shows travel to a Scottish castle ostensibly owned by Alan Cumming. They sit in a circle blindfolded, and Alan, wearing a tartan cape and cutoff shorts, goes around the circle. That's really funny if you've seen the show. Goes around the circle and taps a few of them on the shoulder. These are the traitors. And every night, they choose one of the others, the faithful, to kill. And in the morning, that person is gone. Meanwhile, each evening before bed, the whole castle gathers to banish one of the players that they suspect of being a traitor. They sit around the table, they make their arguments, and then they vote. And whoever gets the most votes is banished. But just before they leave, they stand in the circle of truth and reveal, are they a traitor or a faithful? I couldn't do the Scottish accent. And yes, if it wasn't already clear, this is another in our occasional worship theme, Vince Ammon recaps reality television. Traitors is as fun as Adam said, and now Rochelle and I wait each week for the new episode to drop to see what Alan is wearing and to scream at the TV because they are bad at it. It is infuriating. Bad at determining who is faithful and who is a traitor, which is not entirely their fault because they have no information to go on at all. But that doesn't stop them from having opinions, strong opinions, that they form instantly on the thinnest of pretexts. Who is bad, who is good, faithful or traitor at a glance? She's a traitor because she's quiet and she never puts any names forward. He's a traitor because he's loud and he always puts a lot of names forward. They are faithful because their reality show was on the same network as mine. This was a real argument made over and over again in season two. We are part of the Bravo family. So I know she wouldn't do that to me. Do what? Get tapped on the shoulder by Alan Cumming in plaid culottes? Is the kind of thing I'm always shouting at the TV. But it's no use. That's the show. Because that's also life. Making judgment calls on the thinnest of pretexts. Placing people in categories that are hard to get out of. It's fascinating to experience elementary school again as a parent, to see it all happening in real time, people being assigned friend, enemy, class clown, bully. For the slightest of reasons, for one moment on one day, when you as an adult can see so much more of the story, it's brought back a lot of my own judgments about people with shame. And yet, with the parents, I still do the exact same thing. He's loud, so he's annoying. She's quiet, so she thinks she's better than me. They're cool because we were all on a Bravo TV show together. Okay, not that one, but the rest of it. It's true. I haven't really changed. I still walk around the world neatly sorting people into categories that determine who is worthy of my time and attention, of my love. Like Jesus, sending the sheep to the right, goats to the left, deciding who's faithful, who's a traitor. Jesus is a bad storyteller. Thanks, Monica. He never does any character development. He just settles for broad categories. These types that his audience can judge at a glance. They know as soon as he describes the actors who's good and who's bad. Like once when this lawyer approached him asking what he needed to do to inherit eternal life. And Jesus turned the question back on him, what does the law say? And the lawyer knew the answer, love God and love my neighbor as myself. But who is my neighbor, he asked Jesus. The story says he was trying to justify himself. He wanted Jesus to tell him who he had to love, which of course is really a question of who he was allowed to not love. How far did he have to go? What are the limits? And Jesus tells this story. Maybe you've heard it. A man is walking from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he's assaulted by robbers, beaten and stripped and left for dead. And a priest walks up and sees him and passes by on the other side of the road. And then a Levite, part of this other group of religious officials, a Levite walks up and sees him and passes by on the other side of the road. And then a Samaritan, the hated cousins of the Israelites, a Samaritan walks up and sees the man and takes care of him, pours oil and wine over his wounds to clean and disinfect them, takes him to an inn to rest and heal, pays the bill, and offers more on his return journey. And the story is clear enough that a reality TV star could understand it, but Jesus puts an even finer point on it. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor? The lawyer knows the answer. The one who showed him mercy. The story is clear and neat and tidy. Who do you have to love? The Good Samaritan. The point is plain. The categories are obvious, except that they are not at all. Who do you have to love? The Good Samaritan. But who is that? Because the categories are confused. Good and Samaritan do not go together. Am I supposed to love him because he's a Samaritan? Like, is this a story about loving my enemies? Or like the lawyer says, am I supposed to love him because he showed me mercy? Is it his goodness that makes him my neighbor? Or is it the combination? Is it the fact that he's a good Samaritan, that he breaks out of my categories, that I should still love the best of my worsties? These were the questions that I started asking in staff meeting this week, because despite this being a simple and obvious story that I have heard all my life and preached multiple times before, I was having trouble making sense of it. Is this a story about loving your neighbor or your enemy or the neighbor that you thought was an enemy? And behind all those questions, I was really trying to justify myself. My real question was, who am I allowed to tell people not to love? What are the limits? Because this is not the moment to be telling people to love their enemies. In this moment, we know how dangerous that is. In this community, we know how dangerous it is, how vulnerable we can be. This is a moment when the categories are clear. Good, bad, sheep, goats, faithful, traitors. And to love someone from the other category means the potential of being hurt again. Means opening oneself to their hatred. Making yourself vulnerable to those we know are seeking to hurt us. This is a moment when we're getting clear about what is owed and to whom, and what is not, about the limits of love, the boundaries we need to put in place in order to be safe. So I was only too happy to notice in staff meeting, Jesus isn't telling him to love the robbers. The neighbor is not the one who beats him up. Or even the ones who ignore him, or even every Samaritan. The law says, love your neighbor, and the lawyer says, the neighbor is the one who showed him mercy. So, ergo, by the transitive property, the story means we should love those who show us mercy, which, after all, doesn't sound that bad. like, or that difficult to love the person who saves our lives, the good ones, the sheep, the faithful. But Jesus isn't a good storyteller. He fucks up the ending. The story is supposed to answer the question, who is my neighbor? So I know who I have to love. And we get this whole story and we get to the answer. The neighbor is the one who showed him mercy. Ergo. But then Jesus says, go and do likewise. That's the ending, which is not the answer to the question. It's not even an answer to the question. Who is my neighbor? Go and do likewise. No, Jesus. The question is, who is my neighbor? And the answer is the Samaritan. So the end of the story should be love the Samaritan. But instead, it is you are the Samaritan. Go and do likewise. You are the Samaritan in the story, not the one judging between these different categories of people, deciding that the one who crosses over is bad and the one who shows mercy is good. You're not the one sorting them to your left and to your right. You're the one who comes across a man who has been beaten and stripped, who is unrecognizable, indistinguishable, without any of the markers that could tell you who he is, what group he belongs to. He's just another human being, not a category, but a creation. Goat or sheep, traitor or faithful, you have absolutely no way to tell, no information to go on, no way to justify yourself in passing on. You could still form an opinion, of course, make a judgment even on the thinnest of pretexts. But just to be safe, why not love him?